Hello and welcome to Radical Simple Living Podcast. This is series 2 and it's episode number 19. Now, I've sat down to record this now because I thought my husky puppy here, who was 6 months old a week or two ago, had settled down after a day of long walks and playing in the garden and trying to engage in meaningful conversation with my cats and various things like that. I thought she'd be so tired that she'd want to sit down by the fire and go to sleep, but she may have other ideas, so I may have to start this recording now, and if she gets a bit too boisterous, stop and then carry on later on. Today I want to talk about the land. Now, I'm using the term the land in its broadest sense of the word. And I think we have to be careful about how we use the word the land. Because I'm of the idea that the land is what we grow food on. The land is what we grow trees on, what we grow all sorts of things on that we need. But to other people, the land has a more sort of nationalistic flavour, doesn't it? People say, I will defend the land. This land is what my forefathers fought for. So it's a very emotive term. And when I say I want to talk about the broad senses of the word the land, I want to include all of those things because they are related. And what relates them is this idea of belonging, isn't it? This idea of where you should be. Now, somebody once said that there are two kinds of people. There are those people who are single that want to be part of a couple, and those people in the couple who prefer to be single. It's not true, and it's rather unkind. But the relationship to the land is a bit like that too, isn't it? There seem to be those people who love where they live and love the lands that they live in. And there are other people who think they would be better off somewhere else. And in fact, the two things are related because it's the old idea of the grass being greener on the other side, isn't it? Some people believe they would be happier if they were living somewhere else. And maybe those people don't spend enough time trying to love where they are. Now, I live in an adopted land. I live in southern Sweden. I wasn't born in southern Sweden, I was born in southern London, as it happens. On a world map, southern Sweden and southern London aren't too far apart, but culturally they're a long way apart, believe me. And many of you listening to this podcast will have pulled up your roots sometime. You see, there's a land-related term, isn't it? We say we're putting down roots. And when we move, we say we uprooted ourselves. And a lot of you listening will be people who have uprooted themselves, people who find themselves now living not in the place they were born, but in an adopted place. And I don't want to suggest for one minute that living in an adopted land doesn't mean you can't love the land where you are. I have an absolute love of Småland and southern Sweden. But I wasn't born here. It's true to say my ancestors of about 1,000 years ago, when I've done genetic analysis sometime in the past, came from the southern part of the Scandinavian peninsula. Well, that's where I am now. So in many ways, I'm going back to where I may have come from 1,000 years ago. But it was new when I moved here. And those of you that have experienced the process of moving away from your homeland to somewhere else, will know how strange that is to start off with. Some of you live in vast countries. You can live in the US or Canada or Australia or Russian Federation, and you can move thousands of miles and still be within the same country. But in Europe, where I live, you move a few thousand miles and chances are you find yourself in another country altogether. That's the way it is. And of course, you can move across America and still keep the same language. You can move across Canada and you might have to change language once, I don't know. But to move across Europe, even a short distance, you can find yourself having to cope with a new language, something that I found incredibly difficult. I haven't found it difficult moving here and learning to love the land. I have found it difficult moving here and learning the language. Part of that is because I'm deaf, and I'm not completely deaf, but I have a hearing problem which stops me learning a language as easily as I might do otherwise. Now, my husky has now decided to plonk herself on my lap here and is nudging her nose into my face. So if I have to pause suddenly, that'll be why it is. It could be she's just got a real interest in what I'm doing. Although somehow I don't think so. Okay, so we want to use the term, I'm going to have to pause. Okay, she decided that she wanted to spend a little bit of time out in the what's left of the sunlight today. So I think that's not maybe a bad idea. Okay, so the idea of land, the concept of land, and do you belong to the land? Are you going back to the land? All of these things are important topics. And the reason they're important is for this. When I was a chemistry teacher, I used to teach mainly older students, but occasionally I used to have a class of 13, 14 year olds on my timetable. And the first chemistry lesson for children of that age was entitled, Where Do Things Come From? And the idea was that everything comes from a place that we can define. So for the sake of my chemistry lessons, there were four places that things could come from. Things could come from the Earth's crust, things like metals and minerals and diamonds and clay that we used to make pottery with, and asbestos, and all of these things came from the Earth's crust. The list is pretty extensive, but the Earth's crust is an important place where we get things from. And of course, one of those things is fossil fuels, things like coal and oil. I know coal and oil were something else before they got in the Earth's crust, but it's the Earth's crust we get them from today. Then came the idea of what we get from the oceans. Well, of course, from the oceans we get salt, and we get water one way or another, even through the water cycle, through water evaporating from the oceans and falling down as rain. We get lots of minerals, we get chalk, we get fish, we get crustaceans, we get mollusks, those things that are part of the food of many humans. They'll come from the oceans. We also get other things. Seaweed grows in the oceans, and seaweed is an important food in some parts of the world, but it has to be more important in the future, I suspect. Then comes the atmosphere, and from the atmosphere we get oxygen and nitrogen and carbon dioxide, even though the carbon dioxide has been put there in one way by burning things maybe, and the oxygen has been put there by plants in photosynthesis, but we get those things from the atmosphere. We also get from the atmosphere a lot of fertilisers. Artificially made fertiliser, often made by using nitrogen from the air and getting that to form nitrates. And we know that happens naturally as well. When you get a lightning storm, oxygen from the atmosphere and nitrogen from the atmosphere are combined with that intense energy of a thunderstorm and fall as fertilizer dissolved in the rain. That's why grass always grows very green after a thunderstorm. And the last place was the soil and what comes from the soil. Well, the answer is almost everything else. From the soil, we grow plants, and on those plants, we can eat ourselves or we can feed to animals. On the soil grows fungi, and we use those fungi to eat, or we use fungi to rot things down. Trees grow in the soil, and from those trees, we build things and we make paper. And the list is endless. Now, needless to say, the homework on these occasions was for me to give children a long list of things, and they and substances, and they had to decide which of those four places things came from. And some of them were easy to get and some of them were difficult. The land was the important one because all the plants we use and all the animals that we exploit or use in some way come from the land, with the exception of a few big mammals and that live in the ocean, and fish and the invertebrates live in the ocean too. So soil is important, and soil is important to you. Now, as you know, I spent a lot of time in series one encouraging people to grow things. I try to encourage people to grow things wherever they live. I try to encourage people, if they live in a nice suburban house with a lawn out front, to dig up the lawn, or some of the lawn at least, and plant some things there. You can either grow food there, or you can plant flowers that are going to be of use to pollinating insects. Or you can grow trees that are going to give you fruits and nuts. But you can do something with that land other than just mow it every weekend through the summer. And some people go all the way and turn their garden, turn the lawn into a food producing, very small farm. They become homesteaders. They realise that producing a percentage of their food, even if it starts off being a small percentage, is worthwhile. I also encourage people with much smaller amounts of soil to do something with it, even if it's just planting some pollinating insect-friendly flowers. I encourage people to use window boxes. I encourage people to use roof gardens. I encourage people to undertake guerrilla gardening, where they're finding wasteland and sowing seeds on it and doing things. It may break laws here or there, but it doesn't break the laws of nature as long as you're choosing your species carefully. Now, all of those things bring people into closer use of the soil. But some people, some of you listening here today, will say, well, I live in a high-rise flat in Madrid, or I live in the middle of Toronto, or I live somewhere in San Francisco in a street with no garden. But you still rely on that soil, because if you think about what you've eaten today, all of that came from the soil, unless you live exclusively on factory farmed food and on fish from the sea. Even that factory farmed food is fed on something else. Even if a chicken is unfortunate enough to live in a factory all its life, it's still fed on food that is grown in the land. What you have for breakfast today, assuming you had it, what you have for lunch, what you have for supper tonight, all of it comes from the land. Somebody grew it, somebody sowed the seeds, somebody cared for it, somebody harvested it, somebody got it to the supplier, somebody processed it if it needed processing. I hope much of your food doesn't need much processing. And eventually you end up eating it. Now, if for 1 minute you grow up thinking that the soil isn't important, that the land isn't important, then maybe that will change your mind, that all the food that you eat comes from the land. And we have to cherish the land, and we have to look after the land, and we have to cherish those that work the land for us. If we don't work it ourselves, somebody else works it for us. If you grow all your own food, well done. Most of us are not in that position. We can grow some of our own food, even a lot of our own food, but we're still reliant on farmers to help us feed ourselves. And the old adage goes that maybe two or three times in your life you need a lawyer. Maybe two or three times a year you need a doctor. But three times a day you need a farmer. And it's well worth pondering on that and thinking about the land and our relationship to it. When you go to the supermarket, and when you buy food in the supermarket, you can choose to buy food that is grown in land close to you, or you can choose to buy food that has been flown in from the other side of the world, maybe out of season. You might even make a better decision, if the opportunity arises, to go and shop at a farmer's market and buy food from the people that have grown it yourself. Now, if you're doing that, you're thinking about the land and you're using the land, so you can have an influence on that. Now, one of the problems is to do with the land is that we waste it. We waste land. The most precious commodity that we have on this planet is the land. It is so valuable. If we ignore the land, if we spoil the land, if we erode the land, if we don't put as much into the land as we take out, the human race is finished. And so is much of the natural world finished. What we do to the land is so important, and yet everywhere we waste it. If you live in a city, you will see people that have concreted over their front garden so they can park their car on it. And you might say, well, where else are they going to park their car? I don't know, but did they really have to do that? You may come across people, we've said before, there are those people that turn their whole front garden into a lawn and mow it whilst looking really miserable every weekend. There are even worse people that cover their front garden in astroturf. Fake grass. What are they doing? What are they doing? Make those people eat fake food. If they want to live on plastic grass, give them plastic food to eat. It's so important that we don't waste any land. If you are lucky enough to have a garden, go and have a look at it next time you get the chance and see what you can grow on it. See what you can do on it, because growing plants on any amount of land doesn't only help you, it helps the whole environment. It puts oxygen into the air. It puts nectar into the bodies of those little pollinating insects. It cleans the air. Plants are very good at removing pollution from the air, in inner cities in particular. You can help all those things by growing something. And if you haven't got much of a front garden, you can do things with pots, you can do things with planters, you can do something. So as individuals who waste land, there are even those people who let their back gardens turn into a jungle. Now, in a way, they're not as bad as the people that concrete over their gardens, because at least there's living things in that jungle. And at least the old joke about, you know, do you ever cut your grass? I can't, because I can't find the lawnmower. It's out there somewhere. It's true of many places you see. But in those gardens, wildlife is living, plants are photosynthesizing, insects and invertebrates are burrowing around. So in many ways, that's not a bigger crime as concreting over or decking over your garden. Now, we don't only waste the land as individuals, we also waste the land as communities. We allow vast amounts of land to be turned into golf courses. Now, there are some of you there who like to play golf. Okay, so I'm not going to be rude to you specifically, but the golf courses that I have seen have used up prime quality agricultural land to make a golf course. And that, to me, is an unspeakable crime. It's a total crime. We don't need more golf courses. We do need food, because the population of the world is getting bigger and anything we can do helps. Now, I don't mind so much if golf courses are built on land that is not very good for agriculture, but no, they always do it. And I'm told to get planning permission, this was back in the UK, I was told by a farmer, what you do if you want to make loads of money on your farm is you make it as unproductive as possible for 3 or 4 years. And then you go and in unison with some company that builds golf courses, you go to the local authority and you say, this is very low grade agricultural land. Look at the terrible croppage figures I've got for the past 3 years. And local authorities say, well, that's terrible. That's not growing anything. Yes, you can turn that into a golf course. And then you do. And then it's never going to be returned to agricultural land. I've known golf courses end up as housing estates, but I have never yet seen a golf course go under the plough and go back to agricultural land again. Land that's used for golf courses has gone for good. Now, that was me dropping a pencil in shock at that statement. It's gone for good. So communities, what you can do as community is when there's planning permission comes up, and I know, having been involved in protests against planning permission in my past, it's not an easy job, because local authorities are often in the control of politicians who are lining their pockets, or those that aren't lining their pockets like to do networking and influencing, and oh yeah, if I say yes to this golf course being built here, I can get a you know, I can be a guest of honour there and get a few. Oh, this goes on. There's Freemasonry. There's brown paper envelopes change places. This isn't news. We know this. Land is valuable and lots of people are riding on the backs of it and making money. If there is a golf course being planned where you are, or if land is being taken to be used for something it's not suitable for, protest. Go along, write to your local authority, your local council, or your county, or your commune, or whatever it is in your country, and protest to this altogether. A lot of people are making a lot of money out of land. Sometimes whole nations are wasting their land. In North America, those prairies are perfect for grazing cattle. They're perfect for grazing cattle because they have evolved to buffalo to graze on. And the fact that the buffalo have gone for the main part and we're now grazing cattle on them means that they're still fulfilling their natural function. But what are we doing? We're building on those prairies. We're building holiday resorts. We're building golf courses, back to it. We're building shopping malls. And what's happening to the food producing capacity of those parts of the world? Well, that's easy. If we want to produce more beef and we can't do it anymore in Wyoming because we've built golf courses and hotels and things on the land that we used to use for raising cattle, that's okay. We can get somebody down into Brazil to level a bit more rainforest and we'll start using that to rear cattle on instead. We must use the land we have for what it's best suited for. Lots of parts of the world are trying to use the land they have for something it is unsuited for. The English countryside, particularly in South Oxfordshire, has been decimated for people taking the small mixed farms that were there 50 years ago, farms that were surrounded by hedgerows with little bits of woodland in lands that were difficult to plough. So wildlife had a bigger part to play living there, as did the farmer who was cropping the soil for land. What did they do? In the 1960s and the 1970s, they ripped up the hedgerows. They ploughed up the whole lot and they turned it into a prairie. England isn't a prairie nation. There are no prairies in England. Choosing to take out hedgerows and turn it into an enormous landscape. There's a bit in South Oxfordshire where every direction you look in, all you see is wheat growing. And as many of you that live in the UK know, wheat produced in the UK isn't very good quality. You can't make bread out of it properly without using something to add to the flour to fortify it. If you want to make good bread in Britain, you go to the shop and you buy French flour or Canadian flour, which has got a higher protein content. Or you can use UK flour and you need to add something to it, like pea flour or bean flour, in order to give it that extra protein so you can make bread out of it. All of that food that's been grown in the prairie of South Oxfordshire is being used to raise cattle, to feed cattle, to feed chickens in factory farms. That's not real farming. That's not really using the land. That's turning the land into an industrial unit. And it's not a good thing to do. And it's not only these industrial farmers that are wrecking the land. And it's not only the people that build vast numbers of golf courses that we don't need that are wrecking the land. It is bankers who are wrecking the land. Now, I will remind you all that a few years ago, when bankers found themselves in financial problems, they went to governments wringing their hand and the governments reached into their coffers and paid them vast amounts of money to keep them afloat and then increased taxes so everybody had to pay for the bankers. And the bankers went a year or so without their bonuses. And then all of a sudden, no, bankers must have their bonuses back because apparently bankers don't work unless they get bonuses. If you're a farmer or you're a factory worker, you have to work for your salary. But if you're a banker, you need bonuses to work. Otherwise, you don't work properly. And if you don't work properly, terrible things happen and banks go bust. Well, the banks were going bust anyway. Banks were going bust and the bankers were getting big bonuses. As we speak, or as I speak and you listen, somewhere in some part of the world, a farmer is being put off their land. They are being put off their land not because they don't want to farm it, because they do. They're not being put off their land because they don't know how to farm. Many of them are expert farmers. Many of them come from generations that have lived and farmed that land. They're not being put off the land because they can't afford the purchase price of the land if they had to buy it or if they had to remortgage it. They can afford to pay that. They're being put off their land because the interest payments are so high. And why are the interest payments so high? So the banks can make a profit. We can't live on bankers' profits. We can't eat bankers' bonuses. We eat the food that farmers are producing. And shouldn't we live in a society where farmers are more important than bankers? Shouldn't we live in a society where the production of food and the production of timber and the production of fibre and the production of medicinal plants is one of the most important things that we do on this planet? Shouldn't we hold farmers in high esteem? And shouldn't we, all of us, attempt to be closer to the land we live on? So in answer to that question, how do we get closer to the land? This is it. If you have any land at all, grow things on it. Don't grow exotic things that don't grow very well where you live. Grow things that grow very well where you live so you can eat plenty of them and give them away or sell them or do something. But if you're growing things on your land, you're doing something useful. You are the custodians of that land. You're doing something valuable. If you can't grow food, grow flowers. Buy those flowers, grow those flowers that insects can get into. Don't buy the big, blousy kind of flowers that no insect can find the entrance to. If you can see the centre of a flower on the seed packet or at the garden centre, then insects will get to it. So if you can't grow vegetables, grow flowers. If you can grow vegetables, grow some flowers at all. If you go to your supermarket, buy local. If you go to your farmer's market, buy all you can. Be kind to those people that have grown that food and are producing it for you. And if you're eating more vegetables and if you're eating more things grown locally, you're going to be doing yourself a lot of good anyway. On a bigger level, object to planning permission if it's putting people off the land and if it's telling us that we need more golf courses, which we most obviously don't need. And if you are asked this year of elections, with elections all over the world, some of them have already taken place, but if you live in a part of the world where elections are coming, question your political parties about what their attitude is to the land, what their attitude is to farmers. And if their attitude is, let's get food from where it's cheapest in the world and pile up the supermarket shelves high and not worry too much about what's happening on their own doorstep, then whatever party they represent, do not vote for them. Trust the land. Help the farmers grow what they can grow. Help farmers grow local crops that are going to find a market and are going to like the climate and are going to help save the environment where you live and the environment globally. I'd like to finish today with a quote from Alexander Pope. And Alexander Pope, because I used to live very close to where Alexander Pope lived in his time. We weren't there at the same time. I'm not as old as that. But it's called Pope's Meadow. And it's a very lovely meadow in a village called Binfield, which is in Berkshire. And I apologise right away, because this is a fairly sexist little bit of verse here. It mentions two things that have a sexual position which suggests he's only talking about men. I don't believe he was. I think he was using man as the terms of the of the time had it. But here's the quote. "Happy the man whose wish and care a few paternal acres bound, content to breathe his native air in his own ground." Now, you could say, happy the woman and maternal acres, and the meaning of that little verse will be the same. You have to value where you are. You have to value where you live. If you really find yourself so opposed to where you live that you can't abide it, what you have to do is move. And if you are going to move, don't move from one city to another. Don't move from the outer city to the inner city, or the inner city to the outer city. Move onto the land. That's the answer, really, to all these problems. And it's a true answer to get back to simple living. It's good to talk to you. I will be back again soon. Do what you can to spread this podcast around your friends on social media, please. And it's been very nice talking to you today. Thank you.